Infinite Intruder by Alan Norse. Part 1. When Roger Strang found that someone was killing his son, killing him horribly and often, he started investigating. He wasn't prepared to find the results of another investigation, this time about his own life. It was the second time they tried that Roger realized someone was trying to kill his son. The first time there had been no particular question. Accidents happen. Even in those days, with all the base safety regulations and strict speedway lane laws, young boys would occasionally try to gun their monowheels out of the slow lanes into the terribly swift traffic. When they did, accidents did occur. The first time, when they brought David home in the base ambulance, shaken but unhurt, with the twisted, smashed remains of his monowheel, Roger and Ann Strang had breathed weakly and decided between themselves that the boy should be scolded within an inch of his life, and the fact that David maintained tenaciously that he had never swerved from the slow monowheel lane didn't bother his parents a bit. They were acquainted with another small boy frailty. Small boys on occasion are inclined to fib. But the second time, David was not fibbing. Roger Strang saw the accident the second time. He saw all the circumstances involved, and he realized, with horrible clarity, that someone, somehow, was trying to kill his son. It had been late on a Saturday afternoon. The free weekends at the Barrier Base engineers had once enjoyed to take their families for picnics outside or to rest and relax were things of the past, and for the work on the barrier was reaching a critical stage, demanding more and more of the technicians, scientists, and engineers engaged in its development. Already, diplomatic relations with the Eurasian Combine were becoming more and more impossible. The barrier had to be built, and quickly, or another more terrible New York City would be the result. Roger had never cleared from his mind the flaming picture of that night of horror, just 5 years before, when the mighty metropolis had burst into radioactive flame to announce the beginning of the first atomic war. The year 2078 was engraved in millions of minds as the year of the most horrible and the shortest war in all history, for an armistice had been signed not 4 days after the first bomb had been dropped. An armistice, but an uneasy peace, for neither of the great nations had really known what atomic war would be like until it happened. And once upon them, they found that atomic war was not practical, for both mighty opponents would have been gutted in a matter of weeks. The armistice had stopped the bombs, but hostilities continued until the combined scientific forces of one nation could succeed in preparing a defense. That particular Saturday afternoon had been busy in the main labs on the barrier base. The problems of erecting a continental-long electronic barrier to cover the coast of North America was a staggering proposition. Roger Strang was nearly finished and ready for home as dusk was falling. Leaving his work at the desk, he was slipping on his jacket when David came into the lab. He was small for 12 years, with tasseled sand-brown hair standing up at odd angles about a sharp, intelligent face. "I came to get you, Daddy," he said. Roger smiled. "You rode all the way down here just to go home with me?" "Maybe we could get some icy pops for supper on the way home," David remarked innocently. Roger grinned broadly and slapped the boy on the back. "You'd sell your soul for an icy pop," he grinned. The corridor was dark. The man and boy walked down to the elevator, and in a moment were swishing down to the dark and deserted lobby below. David stepped first from the elevator when the men struck. One stood on either side of the door in the shadow. The boy screamed and reeled from the blow across the neck. Suddenly Roger heard the sharp pistol reports. David dropped with a groan, and Roger staggered against the wall from a powerful blow in the face. He shook his head groggily, catching a glimpse of two men running through the door into the street below, as three or four people ran into the lobby, flushed out by the shots. Roger shouted, pointing to the door, but the people were looking at the boy. Roger sank down beside his son, deft fingers loosening the blouse. The boy's small face was deathly white, fearful sobs choking his breath as he closed his eyes and shivered. Roger searched under his blouse, trying to find the bullet holes, and to his chagrin, there weren't any bullet holes. "Where did you feel the gun?" David pointed vaguely at his lower ribs. "Right here," he said. "It hurt when they shoved the gun at me." "But they couldn't have pulled the trigger if the gun was pointed there." He examined the unbroken skin on the boy's chest, fear tearing through his mind.